Don't Call It a Comeback, the boxing scene in Maine. Las Vegas, Atlantic City, Lewiston, Maine. Three towns that don't usually have much in common. But if you happen to be speaking to a boxing aficionado, they will no doubt tell you about one of the most notable fights in boxing history. The famed Phantom Punch Fight between Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston that took place in Lewiston more than a half century ago. I'm Jennifer Rooks. A new Ken Burns documentary about Muhammad Ali begins airing this weekend on PBS. Today on Maine Calling, we're going to talk about the amateur boxing scene here in our state. It's still going strong, and participants range from the young to the old, women and men, lifelong Mainers, and people new to the state. Maine Calling goes inside the ropes of amateur boxing next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine has a special connection to boxing, in large part because of the historic 1965 fight between Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston in Lewiston. Today, we'll explore Maine's boxing heritage and learn about the popularity of amateur boxing, especially among younger people and Maine's immigrant communities. This show ties into the new Ken Burns PBS documentary about Muhammad Ali premiering this weekend, as well as two Maine public community films that will be shown, Liz and Raising Ali. They both air this Sunday evening at 7 and 7:30. Plus, there are more boxing videos to watch. Check out the Assignment Maine video by Maine Public's Brian Bouchard about today's guest and boxing community leader Bob Russo, as well as the documentary film The Phantom Punch from 1995 that features Mainers recalling the famous championship fight in Lewiston. You can find links to all of these films on Maine Calling's website and our Facebook page. Well, joining me today for the Maine Calling program, Bob Russo, who is founder of the Portland Boxing Club and national president of Golden Gloves America, and Lisa Caronia Coombs, who is a boxer and boxing coach and former national and world champion. She also won a lawsuit against USA Boxing. We're going to learn about that. We invite your questions and comments. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Bob and Lisa, welcome to both of you. And Bob and Lisa, I want to ask you all about amateur boxing today in Maine. But first, we're going to go back to 1965. And Bob Russo, you were there. You were at the fight. I'm looking at you right now at Zoom. You don't seem old enough to have been there, but you were 9 years old. How was it that you happened to be at the famous Muhammad Ali Sonny Liston fight?
Well, thankfully, my uncle was the chairman of the boxing commission in Maine when the fight happened. And he was certainly instrumental in getting the fight to Maine. We all got free tickets. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been there. Those were $100 tickets. And, everybody, my uncles, my cousins, they all got tickets. So we were all there.
And you were right in the fifth row. What do you remember about it? What do you remember about the scene? Was it as big of a deal as people remember it to be?
Well, it certainly was to me. I mean, I was 9 years old, and I actually was a boxing fan before that, too. So I was just thrilled to be there. And, I think more than anything was my impression, the impression that I have of the fight and the surroundings of it was all the boxing celebrities that were there. Joe Louis was there, in Jersey Joe Walcott, in the Cinderella Man, James J. Braddock. If you've ever saw the movie, ever seen the movie, The Cinderella Man by Russell Crowe, Willie Pep, Rocky Marciano. I mean, so I knew all those guys. So I was just thrilled to see those people, Floyd Patterson, and so many of them.
So you were sitting, a nine-year-old boy sitting in the fifth row, probably there early and watching all your boxing heroes, probably close enough that you could almost touch them, right?
Yeah, actually I did shake hands with a few of those people, and it was, you know, it was just great. It was just a memory that I'll never forget.
What is famous about that fight? Several things, but the so-called Phantom Punch. Tell us why it's called the Phantom Punch, Bob Russo, and what you think really happened.
Well, I think that one of the biggest points of is the misconception of it is the fact that, unfortunately, back in those days, they used celebrity referees. And so they used, you know, boxers from the past and so on. That's not, I don't think that they, I think after that, they kind of stopped doing that. And Jersey Joe Walcott was the referee. It's not that he didn't have any experience, but probably not enough experience to handle the situation and to handle someone like Muhammad Ali, who was hard to handle. But, you know, it was kind of mishandled. When the punch that landed was enough to put him down, but not keep him down. And he was kind of, you know, if you see the film, he was kind of leaning in. So he was kind of front heavy and he was pushing Ali back. And then Ali clipped him with the right hand and put him down. It was kind of like a flash knockdown. And he went down and, you know, he started counting. And then Ali come out of the corner and was telling him to get up and so on. So technically when that happens, the count has to stop until he's back in the neutral corner. So he kept coming out of the corner, which made the count longer. The editor of Ring Magazine, Nat Fleischer, was there at, you know, right at the front table at ringside. And he called Jersey Joe Walcott over and told him that the fight should be stopped because Liston was down more than the 10 count, which was really inaccurate because he was down, but the count had to be stopped. So, he wasn't down more than he should have been by the count. So that was a big thing. He was over there talking to the referee, to Nat Fleischer, and the guys were up fighting again. A lot of people don't realize that. They think he was counted out and that was the end of the fight. But they were up fighting again when Jersey Joe Walcott went over and, you know, listening to the editor of Ring Magazine and stopped the fight. So that was unfortunate. It was really, you know, unfortunately mishandled more than anything. You know, the real bottom line here is, you know, people say the fight was fixed and so on. You know, it would have been fixed if Ali lost, because Ali beats Sonny Liston 1,000 times out of 1,000 times. It was young against old. It was fast against slow. He proved that in the, you know, a lot of people, this was the rematch. And Sonny Liston was a heavy favorite in the first fight a year before. And Ali basically gave him a paint job. I mean, he beat him easy. It was obvious that he had no answer for the skills and speed of Muhammad Ali.
Mm. Well, Bob Russo, I so appreciate you bringing us up to speed. Our producer, Jonathan, makes a note that there's a great discussion of the Phantom Punch and what may or may not have happened in the documentary, The Phantom Punch, which we have a link on our website. Bob, when did you open the Portland Boxing Club? Tell us when you decided to make this your life.
Well, I've always been, a huge fan, and I started going to a boxing gym when I was about 11. And, so I've been, involved one way or the other since I was a little kid, obviously. And, time changes, and, I actually had an eye disease that I'm blind, legally blind in one eye. And, I got that when I was like a sophomore. And so that, stopped my ability to compete officially. I did a lot of smoker type bouts and stuff like that. But So I was in the gym at an early age and so on. And then, you know, I fell off a little bit, and then a gym opened up near where the one we are now. And so I started to support that. It wasn't run too well. And then an opportunity came about almost 30 years ago. This year coming in 22 will be 30 years that I've had the gym. And we renovated the gym, and it worked out great. I mean, we started to do the smaller events there. We would stuff in 500 people when basically 300 people should be in there, but 500, over 500 people would be in there. You could not move. Boxing in Portland is, it's just the right demographics, I guess, because back in the 60s and 70s at the Expo, I was actually the glove boy then, when my uncle was the commissioner then, right after the Ali fight, the Expo started to really get popular, and it ran every Thursday night for about 10 years. And it was proclaimed the busiest boxing town in the world. The Expo was packed every week, and Thanksgiving night, the place was packed. So it was just a great era, and it became kind of like a franchise sport in Portland. I mean, it was just the talk of the town and so on. And, you know, so it was just great. And then, I ended up opening a gym at 1992, and we've been there ever since. And, it's been just a great run. As I've said many times, is that it's so much fun, because we do really well, and that's so important, is that this would not be fun if we were losing all the time. And but we win, and we've got, I think 221 championships now, a number of national championships. So, you know, that's what makes it fun. I think that back in the day, when the main fighters went to Massachusetts to box, I think that in a lot of cases, they wanted to be matched against Maine fighters. That changed, you know, with the Portland Boxing Club. We brought real good competitors, and you know, it's been fun because of that. It's been great.
Well, you provided the perfect segue to say it's been fun because we win. We have one of your winners here with us for the program, Lisa Caronia. Coombs is one of your winners, but I'm guessing back in the 60s and 70s, Bob Russo, that when you were talking about the tradition of boxing, you weren't talking about women boxers, but Lisa Coombs, you are a five-time national champion out of Bob's gym?
Yes, that's correct. Yes. And I have,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have a very non-traditional way of how I got there.
That's what I was going to ask. One of the things that I love as I've been learning about this, this sport, is that, you really can't, stereotype the people who are involved in boxing. Can you, Lisa? And tell us your story. How did you get involved in boxing?
Right. That's correct. Well, for one, it's non-traditional because I'm a female, and that's not very common in boxing. And although it's becoming more common, it wasn't back when I started boxing in 2001. And I really didn't have a troubled background, which is one of the stereotypes. And I wasn't running from anything. And as simple as it sounds, I was just looking for something different to do besides running and bicycling. And so I so happened to have one of the best boxing gyms in my backyard in Portland. So I said, that sounds fun. That sounds like something I could do to get into good shape. And I walked into the Portland Boxing Club, and then the rest was history after that. I pretty much became a fixture for 10 years.
Bob, do you remember when Lisa walked in the door?
Specifically the day that she walked in? No. But, you know, Lisa was one of those people that, you know, you could tell that was very committed and very serious. And, you know, people like that are just fun to work with. And, you know, it's, you know, having good students is, you know, really fun to be a coach under those circumstances. And, you know, Lisa was very dedicated and really trained hard and really listened. And she was very tall. And so it made for a natural boxer, you know, using, and I like to train boxers, not necessarily sluggers. And, And she was really built for that. She had a long reach. And so, you know, for the first number of fights that she had, I mean, she won basically because of her boxing ability, using the jab and, you know, real out of the book boxing technique, which is hitting and not getting hit. And so she learned that. I mean, she learned, piece by piece, but the main thing was, you know, a good jab and ability to move around and jab and not get hit and to hit. So she was very good at that.
Lisa, what's the difference between a boxer and a slugger?
Well, I think a boxer has a little bit more, obviously a lot more technical ability, ability to sort of think quickly and stay calm. I mean, it's really hard to describe the calmness that's needed in boxing, especially when you are boxing against a slugger. Stay calm, stick with the technical abilities that you have, use that jab, move out of the way, and just, when there's a slugger in there, a lot of times you just let them punch themselves out first 30 seconds, and then you move in with that technical ability and land those shots.
Lisa, what is it about boxing? What caught your imagination after you walked into the gym? Why did you stay with it for 10 years?
Yeah, that's one of the most popular questions I'm asked. And one thing is the Portland Boxing Club became my family. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and I moved up here and had a job up here, and that really became my extended family. And I walked into that gym and was welcomed. And it was for the first time ever in my life that I had been exposed to so many different people from different walks of life that I would have never come across otherwise. That in combination with, I just love the sport. It demanded a high level of determination, a high level of athleticism, and it really drew me. And having a coach that taught me really how to hit and not get hit was really key as well. Having that really good coaching staff. No one likes to get hit. So being able to perfect and finesse that jab and really move around. And then it opened the door for a lot more opportunity for me. So I learned a lot of lessons there.
And you are a scientist by training, right?
Yeah. And I think maybe part of that made me a better technical boxer. I looked at everything scientifically. When I was training, I trained scientifically. I tracked everything I ate, my calories, how much I exercised, to make sure that when I stepped on that scale, I was exactly right on for my weight. I went in there with no excuses. I didn't train hard enough, or I didn't do enough sparring. I knew that when I went in there that I was going to technically be 100%.
Well, I have so many more questions for both of you. We do need to take a break, but Lisa, I really want to ask you about the lawsuit against USA Boxing and Bob Russo. I really want to learn about some of the young people that you're training today. So we're going to take a quick break, and we also want to hear from you and the audience. What are your questions about amateur boxing in Maine? The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the Jackson Laboratory, hosting a virtual forum about the post-COVID world in October. Register at jax.org/healthcare. And Booth Bay Railway Village Museum, offering train rides, an antique village, festivals, and more. railwayvillage.org. Beginning Sunday evening on Maine Public Television, we'll bring you Muhammad Ali, a new four-part film from Ken Burns, bringing to life one of the most indelible figures of the 20th century, a three-time heavyweight boxing champion who captivated millions of fans across the world with his mesmerizing combination of speed, grace, and power in the ring, and charm and playful boasting outside of it. That's Muhammad Ali, premiering Sunday night at 8 on Maine Public Television, and also available to stream at mainepublic.org. Do you have a passion for public media, enjoy working with people, and an interest in joining a mission-driven organization? Maine Public is hiring. We have full and part-time opportunities available in a variety of fields, and we'd like to hear from you. You'll be working with others who strongly support and want to help grow Maine Public's shared values of civic engagement, lifelong learning, and public service. Complete position and application information is available at mainepublic.org/careers. Thank you.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are paying tribute to Maine's boxing history and learning about the amateur boxing community here. My guest, Lisa Caronia Combs, who is a boxer and a boxing coach and former national and world champion. And Bob Russo, who is longtime leader of the Portland Boxing Club and national president of Golden Gloves America. Share your comments or questions. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. So Lisa, tell us about the lawsuit. What happened that spurred that? What was your experience?
So back when I started competing at the national level, the way it would work is that you advance from the regional, and then when you win there, you then make it to a national level and you compete against everyone in the United States. So the particular year that we're talking about, our coach and I were going out to nationals along with a male boxer as well. And as we were doing that, we found that we were treated differently. When we got out to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado, the men were given the opportunity to stay at the Olympic Training Center, get their housing and their meals all on campus. And we were told we had to find our own hotel and we had to pay for our own airfare. And we also had to eat at restaurants, so various restaurants. And so you can see the discrepancy there. Between the gender, we had a male boxer and myself, and we were treated very differently, even though we advanced the same way. And I made it to that national tournament the same way my male counterpart did. But however, when we got to that national level, we were not afforded the same opportunities.
What year was this?
This was in 2006, I believe.
So not that long ago.
No, I know. That's what's really surprising about it. And in fact, women's boxing wasn't an event in the Olympics until 2012.
So you filed suit. What happened then?
My coach and I were pretty upset about that and didn't feel that was right. And I ended up winning the nationals that year. And so we pointed it out and we asked for reimbursement and change. And we pretty much were sent on our way. We were ignored. So we had no other way to go about it except to hire a lawyer and ask them to move forward with treating women equally and reimbursing us for our expenses. Because as you know, the Portland Boxing Club is a nonprofit. So all of the money that comes in goes out to pay for their athletes. And we pay dues to the LBCs here in the regional area who paid for the men. And we felt like we need to be reimbursed as well.
And in the end, did you win?
We settled, and there were changes that were made. The things that we thought were unfair were corrected and are still being worked on to this day.
That's what I was going to ask. Bob Russo, when you have champions now that are women, what is the experience that they're having? Is it the same experience that Lisa experienced, or is it better?
It's better. You know, one of the things that USA Boxing said that at the time Lisa, when this happened with Lisa, is that women's boxing wasn't in the Olympics. And supposedly their plea that they copped was that you could not use the Olympic Training Center for a sport or for participants that weren't in the Olympics. But, you know, they tripped over that by they had the national championships there for the women. So it was really ridiculous. And, you know, it was so blatant that it was laughable, because I, as a coach, could buy a pass to eat in the cafeteria, but she couldn't. I mean, it was really ridiculous. So, I mean, it was terrible, and that's why we sued. But it has changed, and it's now equal on everything, and, you know, everything is the same, and thanks to us bringing it to the forefront.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, and I was a little bit older when I started boxing. I started boxing at 26. So when I was at the national level, I was near 30. And so some of the younger athletes, female athletes, were around 16, 17, and they started to be able to get these opportunities that I didn't initially have. And even many years later, I was getting letters from these young female athletes thanking me for what we did and the path that we blazed. And it was difficult because I was still competing at the time. And so I was worried that I would be discriminated against again, because now I just sued the entity that's judging me. So I think it took a lot of courage, and with my coach backing me up and knowing that this could make change for women in the future, I felt like it was the right thing to do.
Mm. We just had the Olympics. When you watch on TV and you see women's boxing, do you feel in some small part proud that you had a role in making that a reality?
Yes, I do. And some of the women that were actually on the national team with me, I had watched compete in the Olympics. So it brings me a lot of joy, because as a national team competitor, you start to see these other athletes as sisters. So a lot of them still felt very close to me. So to see that they were able to have those opportunities made me feel really good. And even the women, they've only been able to compete since 2012. They brought home 4 medals already, 2 golds and 2 bronze. And so that, you know, makes me feel really happy that that opportunity was there for them.
Bob, we've been talking about women in boxing is breaking a stereotype, but break some other stereotypes for us. We walk into your gym today. Who do we see? We look around. Who's training there?
It's the United Nations, really. When I first started, it was, you know, mostly white kids. And nowadays, it's everybody. I mean, you know, typically we get, which is, you know, boxing in general over the years, it was always the immigrant people that did well in the sport. You know, it was the Italians, the Irish, the Jewish, and, you know, different war-torn countries that people escaped from. And they just come from a different place, and they have this great work ethic and the attitude to, you know, have a better life. And, you know, so all of the immigrant kids that I have, and we've had them all, I mean, you know, from Iraq and Rwanda and the Congo and Angola and the Ukraine and Cuba and, you know, every place like that. Somalia, they just seem to, the ones, not all of them, of course, because it boxing is not for everybody, but as a rule, they just train harder and they just work harder at it. And they just have the old work ethics that our grandfathers had when they first came. And, so it's really, you know, it's really a pleasure to work with people that are committed to working hard at it. And, we actually right now, we have kids that will be competing in the New England Championships in the novice level. They're just starting, but one is from Rwanda, one is from Somalia. In the open class, he's from Angola originally. So, you know, it's just a pleasure to work with those kids. They're very thankful, and, you know, they're just great. You know, I hate to say it, but the American kids in general, they're kind of, you know, they don't have the same work ethic in general. Not all of them, of course, because we have a lot of good regular American kids that come from nice families that are good competitors as well. But, you know, just in general, I think that there's a better work ethic from the immigrant kids.
We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Love the show. I grew up a boxing fan. My dad was into boxing, so I followed boxing from an early age. I'm 63 now. But anyway, I attended the 30-year anniversary of the Clay Liston fight in Lewiston. I believe it was called Night of the Young Heavyweights. I think it was like 3-round fights. But I didn't know who was the special guests that were going to be there. And sure enough, I was up on the concourse before the fights started, I bought a ringside ticket. I was like in about the third or fourth row from the ring. And anyway, so I bought the concourse. There was a big ruckus, and here comes a big entourage with Muhammad Ali and Floyd Patterson, and I forget who else, but it was just amazing. And everybody was applauding him, and he stopped and shook his fist and made that funny smirk with his mouth. And anyway, so during the fight, in between these fights, I think there were three rounders, people lined up to get his autograph, and I was able to get Ali's autograph and look him right in the eye, and it was just amazing, a fantastic experience.
Tom, thanks for calling and sharing your experience. Bob, were you there at that as well?
I was, yes. And, you know, whenever Muhammad Ali, I mean, he was just, I mean, he's probably, and was at least, the most famous person on earth. I mean, everywhere he went, when he went to India, 400,000 people came out. I mean, it's just unreal. I mean, there's no one like him, really. I mean, and so when he shows up, I mean, it's quite a thing. And so I agree with the caller that it was quite an experience to see him and to see him again. And, you know, just an iconic guy. I mean, unbelievable.
Okay, we have an email here from a skeptic. Constantino says, standing in your underwear giving each other brain trauma with no compensation. The NFL pays millions to the players who give each other brain trauma. Who wants to go first? Lisa, I'm sure you've heard it. Bob, I'll let you go first. People say, you know, why would you do this? Why would you subject your child, yourself, to concussions, for example?
Well, you know, ironically, you know, speaking for amateur boxing it's actually quite the opposite of that, in surprisingly. I mean, because it's a contact combat sport. But boxing is, the last that I looked, was number 26 on the list of sports injuries. So, you know, and again, it's not about getting hit. It's about not getting hit. And, you know, there's no sport that's in contact that you can, you know, stay forever and, you know, get hit a lot and expect to be, you know, good at that. I mean, expect to, you know, come out of it good. You know, so it's absolutely a limited thing. But, you know, that's why, like I say, that I'm, you know, my thing is more about boxing. I don't like the slugging. I like to box and hit and not get hit. Lisa's a good example of that. You know, I don't think that in her whole career, and she, you know, won 5 national championships, that she ever even had a headache, you know, because of good defense and good skills. So, yeah, is it a dangerous sport? Absolutely it is. And it can be if, in fact, you know, you have trainers that don't train good defense and so on. But, you know, the factoid there is that we're 26 on the sports injury list. I mean, I think that puts fly fishing ahead of us.
Lisa?
Yeah, I am. You know, there's a lot of protective measures, especially in amateur boxing. You have a referee in there, you wear headgear, you have a mouth guard on. And, you know, if you have a couple unanswered blows, the referee's there to jump in. You know, what's really key is finding coaching staff that's going to make sure that they teach you what you need to know to protect yourself. And, they put you in there at the right time. So I can attest to, I don't have any brain damage and I function perfectly well. And I would do it all over again because there are so many more benefits than there were disadvantages. But yes, it's inherently dangerous. And you know that going in, and your opponent knows that as well.
Our sound engineer, KG, wants to know if there are any boxing matches coming up. And if so, what is Bob excited to see?
Yeah, I mean, there are actually, I do a show, excuse me. I do a show, try to do it once or twice a year. That supports our club. I've done 105 shows in Portland. I'm also the director of the New England Golden Gloves, which we do 22 shows a year for that. But in Portland, we have another event coming up November 6th. It'll be a pro-am event. There'll probably be two or three amateur boxers bouts on, and probably seven or eight pro fights on. That is a hugely successful event at the Portland Expo. And, you know, generally speaking, we pretty much come close to selling it out each time. So it's a great event. It's the great atmosphere that we capture, and the crowd, and of course the fans of Portland in the area that have been following these kids for years because of the events that we do. So that's the next event, big event, November 6th. You can go to our website, portlandboxingclub.org, and get more information.
Great. Well, we do need to take another quick break. We're talking about boxing in Maine. More of your questions and comments when we come back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from A Family for Me, a Spurwink program dedicated to finding families for Maine's children in foster care. Learn more at afamilyformemaine.org and the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, a statewide practice representing injured and disabled Mainers since 1974. JoeBornstein.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley.
The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
The Lakers conquered the 2020 NBA championships under strict quarantine, and now researchers are using data from the NBA season bubble to help them study the effects of COVID-19. That's next time on Here and Now.
And stay with us for Here and Now. That begins today at noon, right here on Maine Public Radio. From bookshops to banks, cookware to home repair, a wide variety of businesses and organizations throughout Maine support this service. They understand the value of public radio and want to support it, and they want to reach you, the public radio audience. If your business or organization is interested in learning more, please visit mainepublic.org and click on support and connect your business with our audience. Or call Dionysia Gaddis at 800-884-1717 and thanks.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about boxing today, especially the growing popularity of amateur boxing in Maine. My guest, Bob Russo with the Portland Boxing Club and Golden Gloves America, and Lisa Caronia Coombs, who is a boxing champion and coach. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Going to a message here. Let's see. Oh, I just lost it. Here we go. Pat on Facebook says, my mother always said her father was involved, I think, as a boxing promoter in boxing in Lewiston. I'm 71, so I think we're talking about the 1930s. Is there a way I can find out more information about him? Bob, do you know, is there anybody who is sort of the archivist or historian of boxing in Maine?
Actually, a book that was published a number of years ago, and it was by a gentleman, his last name was Redmond, and it was the Maine boxing record book. There might be something in there. Again, that's a long time ago. So that would have been in the 30s, you know. And, you know, again, back in those days, in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, boxing was intensely popular. It was the number one sport in the country. When the big guys fought, I mean, there was no closed circuit or pay-per-view. So there, you know, 100,000 fans would show up to some of these bouts. So it was a huge sport back then. There was many promoters, and I'm sure that there was a few of them that operated in Maine, but I wouldn't know who that would be. But that would be a good book to check. It was a Maine record book of boxing by a gentleman by Redmond.
Great. We'll go to Bill here, who's calling from Raymond. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, first of all, Bob, I want to thank you so much for everything you do for the community and the kids that are with Portland Boxing. I had the opportunity, it was a privilege to have met him years ago when I had worked on a couple of videos, including a PSA for him. But I wanted to mention to the public as well, it's not just the boxing that, you know, that the kids are getting into. It's all of the development, the social skills, the psychological, mental, physical skills, and that they learn, you know, from going to Portland Boxing. I did want to say one other thing is, you know, I don't know if you still take people in for volunteering or financial donations. You know, I think that's something to mention because I know that he gives to the kids, not just in boxing. He's actually helped a lot of kids out with college as well. So that was my basic comment.
Thank you. You know, thanks for your support. And yes, I mean, you know, if I didn't do events like I do and have the support that I have in the community, we would have been gone a long time ago. And a lot of times, a lot of these gyms, they come and go because there's no money in it. You know, we're not tennis, we're not gymnastics, it's boxing. So we do, you know, a lot of the kids, not all of them, but, you know, a lot of them are underprivileged people and can't afford dues. Our dues is $25 a month. And, you know, most people can't afford it. So, you know, if we don't do fundraising and we don't do events, we have a number of ways to raise money. We have a Red Corner Club that people donate each year. We have many sponsors. The last event that we did, I think we had 132 sponsors, which is amazing. The program was 100 pages. I've never even seen a program that big. There is a number of ways to donate if you go to our website and so on. And again, it's tough. It's a hand to mouth organization. And you know, we also have an online store. We sell T-shirts and swag stuff all over the country, actually. So, you know, you have to develop ways to raise money because otherwise you're not going to last long.
Bill, thanks for your call. And Lisa, Bill talked about the psychological aspect. What has that meant to you as a boxer?
Yeah, that's a good point when he was mentioning the psychological and the mental part of it. And that's something even myself as a professional, when I walked into the Portland Boxing Club, I had a professional job, I had a college degree, and I still learned so much from just the pure sport of boxing. The mental side of it, going in there and making sure that you can stay focused enough to be able to execute everything you've worked so hard for. You have essentially 12 minutes to do what you need to do, and then it's over. And when you get in there, you know, it's just you, yourself. So mentally, you have to really be prepared for that. You have to be prepared for punches that are going to come back at you. So it's a lot. It's a lot of preparation mentally. And I would have never, ever had that aspect in my life had I not been at the Portland Boxing Club.
Bob, I want to ask you, we talked about how boxing used to be so unbelievably popular, and it is experiencing a resurgence among people interested in getting into boxing for personal reasons. But on a national scale, what has the advent of sports like MMA meant to boxing, especially boxing as a spectator sport?
Well, I think that, you know, again, you know, the sport, our sport has basically is the popularity of it is depends on who the characters are that are in the sport. So when you have a Mike Tyson, you know, a Muhammad Ali, a Sugar Ray Leonard, an Oscar De La Hoya, those type people bring a lot of attention to the sport. As far as the MMA gained a lot of popularity because their timing was really good because boxing kind of went off TV for a while and the MMA went on TV and they basically got captured a generation of fans. So that's how they did it. And you know, again, we are, if you have those popular figures involved, if you have locals, when you do events like my events are really popular because it's all locals and people know who these kids are. So you have to have locals. It's hard to promote strangers. And, you know, we always bring in also, I'm kind of running out of road on that, but we always bring in celebrities. We've had Roberto Duran and Buster Douglas and Vinnie Paz and Mickey Ward and Larry Holmes and Boom Boom Mancini and Michael Spinks, Evander Holyfield. And that's a big splash in a small town like Cortland. And, you know, that's the, you know, the popularity. We, again, once again, Cortland is a great fight town and the fans love it. And, you know, so we're very popular nationwide. As the president of Golden Gloves of America, I know that there are many. We have 30 franchises and we have 60 sub-franchises in every part of the country. And, you know, some of the areas aren't as, you know, as popular or as successful, but others are. It depends what the programs are in those areas and if they are developing local talent that people are interested in. So like in New England is a great area. The Golden Gloves that I run in New England and in Lowell, I mean, at the finals, at the last finals that we had 2,600 fans there. Place was rocking. So, you know, it's just popular in certain areas. And again, if you have the locals, it helps.
We'll go to Cheryl, who's calling from Steuben. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi, this is me. In the early 80s, I was one of the first female boxers. Bob Sylvia was the trainer in, I think, Oakland area outside of Waterville. And Lori Holt and I used to box all the time. Lori went on to fight professionally out of state. In the early 80s, I had a fastest fight record that got published in Boxing Illustrated. I did it in Lewiston in the same ring that Muhammad Ali fought in, and I did not really get much recognition for that fastest fight, which was 10 seconds, which I believe was a half a second quicker than Muhammad Ali's. And I put in for the Guinness Book of World Records, but they denied it. So I don't know if it was because Muhammad Ali was so much more popular than I, or, you know, if it just didn't really qualify. But I just wanted to add my 2 cents worth and said I really had an awesome time. Lori Holt was my best competitor, and I'd really love to see women's boxing grow a whole bunch more.
Cheryl, thanks so much for calling in. This is Cheryl Brown, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for calling in. And what was it like for you and Lori in the 80s? Did people give you a hard time?
Negative. Matter of fact, a lot of times it was commented that we were the best fight on the card. She was a heck of a boxer. I was more of a point fighter, not point fighter. I also did martial arts, and she was more of a brawler. And we just had some really, really good matches, which brought, you know, some good quality audiences.
Thanks for calling in. Bob, do you remember Cheryl?
I know the name. You know, back in, you know, it was really a challenge for the ladies of that era because there wasn't many competitors. So, you know, it was kind of a tough road to blaze the trail. But, you know, again, these people had an interest and they started the ball rolling. So kudos to them.
Thanks so much, Cheryl. We'll go to Ron, who's calling from Lewiston. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if we could get a shout out to Joey Gamache from Lewiston. He was a really fine Golden Gloves champion and a national name in boxing from Lewiston. Would Bob Russo give a comment on that, please?
Absolutely. Joey, you know, is the only world champion that came from the state of Maine. And, you know, again, you know, as I referred to earlier, you have to have those local people that, you know, cause excitement. So Joey, you know, deserves a lot of credit for his ability in the ring, a great record, and so on. He won a couple of world titles that the junior lightweight and lightweight championships. And, you know, again, he was a big part of the resurgence in the early 90s, in the late 80s and early 90s. So there was a huge amount of popularity because of Joey. And then actually we came in, you know, actually shortly after that, or kind of at the end of his career. But, you know, we were you know, coming in on his coattails too. So, he deserves a lot of credit. Great guy, great champion, good people.
Thanks for your call, Ron. We will go to Steve calling from Frenchville. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yes, how are you? First of all, thank you, Mr. Russo, for all your great work. I'm 66. I've been a boxing fan since Muhammad Ali spurned my interest. Just like you suggested, it takes characters. I was what was referred to as a Muhammad Ali freak back in the day. And I kept a scrapbook where I have articles from every fight since night from when he won the championship until when he lost it, right? I was a real nerd with that. I would go check all the papers before and after every fight. Anything that had an article, I'd cut it out. So I have this ginormous scrapbook, right? And it's like 10 or 11 inches thick. And it's got everything in it, like I said. So when I heard about this fight card and on the 30th anniversary in Lewiston, I went. And they also had available to buy a ticket to a banquet beforehand. So I went. It was on September 22nd, 1995. I went down. My wife told me, don't get all excited. You know, you probably won't even get to shake his hand. So anyway, when we were set up with tables in a banquet room, really well done. A lot of other celebrities, like it has been mentioned.
Steve, and we're almost out of time. You got to get to the punchline.
So anyway, I ended up hooking up with Howard Bingham. He ended up bringing me to Muhammad Ali's motel room between the banquet and the fight card. And he signed my scrapbook in over 30 places, including signing it by Cassius Clay. So it made my whatever.
Thank you, Steve, for sharing the story. And I'm sorry to have to rush you because we are out of time. I'm sure you will enjoy the documentary that starts on Sunday night. And I want to thank both of my guests, Lisa Caronia Combs, who's a boxer coach, former national champion, and very soon going to be inducted into the Maine Sports Hall of Fame. Thank you for joining me. And Bob Russo, founder, community leader of the Portland Boxing Club and the national president of Golden Gloves America. You can see more with Bob on our Maine Calling Facebook page and webpage, a short video with him, and also on the documentary Raising Ali, which airs on Sunday evening. Today's sound engineer, KG Akeem Aladun, Cindy Hahn, and Jonathan Smith produce Maine Calling. Mike Jandro wrote our theme music. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.